Okay, today we're going to begin discussing the sugya of a vest haguf, which is the Mishnah on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, as opposed to a vest l'kvitzos that we discussed briefly last time and had discussed in the past. A vest haguf is, to use the English of Rabbi Forrest, but this is all Mavur Mishonu, as we'll see, is a symptomatic vest and not a causative vest. Or if you will, a simon and not a siba, that many Rishonim have various formulations of this idea, that a vest haguf is not the various signs of the body that we'll talk about that constitute a vest are not the causes of the flow, but rather symptoms of whatever the causes of the flow are related to the flow, but not causing the flow. So just let's see how the Rashba, as one Rishon, writes it. The Rashba is on the Rashba in two places, but we'll start with the Rashba on Yit Aleph Amud Aleph in the Sugya of Kofetzes, where the Rashba there draws a distinction between a Ves L'Kvitzos and the Ves Taguf. Just bring it up on the screen. So Rashba writes. Aval vest hanikba ba'onsin haba emachmas avest harehu nikba behen kigon shehi regila lafaigulus atesh veroa osha chosheshes v'fikresa b'shipula meyad. These are all various forms of vest haguf, as we'll see in a few minutes. Kayose book is not our Mishnah. He writes the taima she'ein elu gormin levest sheyavo. It's not that these factors cause the onset of ri'ah, but rather the fact that there is a dam coming out in a ri'ah is causing these symptoms. And the Rashba here as well on our Mishnah has that line. Avokan adarabba mikrim elu einan ba'in ela machmas havest. Just as a person has an illness, so there are certain symptoms that are reflective of the illness. The symptoms are not the cause of the illness. They are symptoms of the illness. So a vest haguf also is not the cause of the vest. It's not the cause of the ri'ah. It's a symptom of the ri'ah. Okay. And we'll see the relevance of that a little bit as we go on. So let's just take a look at the Mishnah and define terms to begin with. The Mishnah on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, Kol Isha Sheyesh La Vest Da Yashaita. So the example of the Mishnah is going to be examples of vest haguf, but the principle is that if a woman has a vest, then in the context of Taros Da Yashaita, she doesn't have to be concerned that maybe there is a Re'iyah that predated the onset of the vest that would have rendered her Tameah. The Elohena Vesta, so this is the list that the Mishnah provides of Vesta Guf. Number one, Mifa Hekes. What is Mifa Hekes? Rashi tells us Ishtrulayer, which my French accent is probably not good enough, but we don't really know what that means anyway. But the Tosa Rush helps us a little bit. So the Tosa Rush on the side tells you what does that mean in simple Hebrew. Adam Shaposhet Eivarav, a person who extends his limbs, that if a person stretches in a non-normal way, that would be a Vest Haguf. Then he quotes Rashi and Shabbos, that it means Adam Abaseach Piv, someone who yawns. Now, yawning could be a Vest Haguf, and he quotes Rashi and Shabbos, Brachos Kaftalid. Another instance of that one of the Amoraim, when he would be Mefaik, he would put his hand over his chin. So that's, as Rashi explains here, he was yawning, so he wanted to mask the yawn, cover up the yawn by putting his hand over his chin. The Rashi there in Shabbos says that the Lashon of Mefaik is a notrikon of Piv Hakim, that he raised his mouth, i.e. he yawned. And then the Tosei Rashi has the third shot from the Aruch that it means Ba'aruch Perish Kol Hayotze Min HaGaron Mitoch She'achal Ma'achal Kaved, which is a polite way of saying a burp. And the Rush writes in Simon Aleph, in the back over here in the Piskei Rush, Simon Aleph of the second counting in our parak, that there's no machlokas ledina, that or whatever the correct pshat is in the Mefahekas, or as we'll see, other examples the Mishnah has and the Gemara later on of Avestaguf, one is not to the exclusion of the other. That any such instance of a bodily action or bodily reflex that is associated with the onset of Ria could have the status of a Avestaguf. Okay, so that's number one. A Mefahekas is either stretching, yawning, or burping. Then we have Me'ateshes. What's Me'ateshes? So the Ramban in Perek Vav Halachas says Me'ateshes means Me'ateshes Mamata. The person releases gas. And that's a formulation in Shulchan Aruch here in Sifya Tassus we'll see in a few moments. The Shach in Sifkatun and Gimel quotes that the Ramban Perek Vav Halachas and the Aruch say Me'ateshes Milmala. So that's a modern Hebrew word as well for sneeze. And again, the Shach writes that both Perushim are Tula Lach, whatever the actual Pshah in the word of the Mishnah is, but both would be a potential Vestaguf. Then the third list, the third on the list in the Mishnah, after Mefekas Bateshes, is Kosheshes Befi Kresa, that a woman has stomach pains or stomach cramps, which may be the most prevalent kind of Vestaguf that people have. Ubishi pule me'eha, or there's abdominal pain, Rashi says, v'beis harechem, or v'shofas. Choshesh is v'kreis, or v'shi pule me'eha, v'shofas. What's shofas? So the Gemara explains on the bottom line here, and I'm an aleph, shofas means shofas dam tome mi dam tahor, that a woman sometimes will begin a flow of dam tahor that we know to be dam tahor, and Dam Tahor in a vacuum doesn't pose a problem, but the Dam Tahor then leads into Dam Tame. So if a woman has a transition from Dam Tahor to Dam Tame, the Dam Tahor itself could constitute a Vest Haguf. And finally, Kamins Smar Muros Ochsin Osa. She is overtaken by Smar Muros, which again, Rashi's French doesn't help us so much. But the Ramban writes, Smar Muros are Tzire Kadachas, feverish chills or feverish tremoring, something caused by a fever. And then the Gemara has additional examples of Avesta Guf on Amud Beis. The Gemara has Rasheha Veivareha Kvedin Aleha, that the woman has headaches or aches of limbs. And then there's a Roseses, or the Beis Yosef Girsa was Rosachas, which sounds like a fever of some sort. And finally, the Gemara has the term Gosa, which Rashi says is a yawn, which even though the Tosa Rashi had the Perish earlier that Mefahekas was a yawn, but Rashi learned Mefahekas as a stretching, so Rashi's free to learn a Gosa as a yawn. And Tosfos, who learned Mefahekas, like Rashi, says that Gosa is burping. Okay. And then the Rabbi Morgenstern just points out that if you look at the Rambam page of Mishnayos, the Rambam has another addition to this list that we don't have in the Mishnah of the Gemara, and that is of Dika'on. Women experiences some kind of depression or some kind of mental reaction as a precursor to a re'iyah. Okay. So Rovi Shonim, and this is the way we assume lalachas, we'll see in a few moments, assume that a vest haguf can stand alone as an independent vest. We'll see that there's a standalone Vestaguf where the only indicator, the only expected manifestation that creates a vest is the physical sensation or the physical reaction itself. And then we'll see there's a vesaguf hamorkav, where there's a combination, just as we discussed last time, that you could have a hybrid of kfitzos and yamim, that lahalacha, a vesa kfitzos doesn't stand on its own, and it's only of significance if there's a hybrid between an expected time with the kfitzos. So here also, and this, all we should agree, you could have a vest haguf, which is morkav of a pattern of yamim as well. But the Rambam, at least the way the Magen Mishnah understands, the simple reading of the Rambam doesn't view a vest haguf as standing alone, but only has a vest haguf in the context of a pattern of yamim as well. Let's take a look at that on the screen. The Rambam Isurei Bia Periches Halacha Beis. And again, the Beis Yosef quotes this, but it's not accepted lahalacha, at least the way the Magen Mishnah understands. So the Rambam in Periches Isurei Bia Halacha Beis has the following line: the Kol Nuchi Yavo Adam Targish Batzma. So a woman before the onset of Ri'iya has this following sensation: Mifahekes, Misateshes, Choshashes Pre Krisa, Shipuli Meha, the Yastamir Saras Bisara, that the hairs on her body stand up. Oh, Yicham the Saras fever, Hayotir Moas Elu, the Avoula Vestas Elu, O Echamehen, Bishakvuolo Miyom Vesta. And she experiences these physical manifestations at an expected time, v'shakvula miyom vesta. So the Magen Mishnah understands that the Rambam only presents a vesta guf in the context of a existing pattern of ri'os, a pattern liyamim. But if you had a totally regular vesta guf, even if there's an association that a woman always sees after having any of these physical sensations, that would not itself create a vest, according to the Rambam. And the Magen Mishnah explains how, if that's the case, then what's the chiddush of vest aguf? Because you're just falling back on a vest liyamim anyway, or your vest achodesh, or your vest aflaga. The Magen Mishnah explains how there could be nafkaminas in the context of the Mishnah for taros as to how long do you have to be choshesh, or during what window do you have to be choshesh, that maybe she was tamei in taros. But in a chanami, for the Rambam, there's no nafkamina of a vest aguf as far as our interest of Issa Labayla, Bedikos Bonus a vest, etc. That's all subsumed under a pre-existing vest liyamim. But that's a Yasher.
Wouldn't a nafkamina though be that this could be a kula, and that if a woman always sees on the fifth of the month with a sneeze or with a few sneezes, and 1 month she would to not sneeze, then I assume there would be no vesas.
So the way the Magen Mishnah understands the Rambam, if she still has a re'iyah on the predictable yom havest, then the fact that the vest haguf or element falls off isn't oker the vest liyamim.
Okay.
So lahalacha will see that's not true necessarily, but that's how the Magen Mishnah seems to understand the Rambam, that these vestos haguf are only add-ons that have nafkaminas in taros, but when it comes to akiras havest, the yom havest is all that's really necessary.
Because it's the same whether it's there or not, okay.
Right. It could be you could have said that, but the... And I saw the Masifta of the Gemara, they quote some Merkavis on Mishnah that argues on the Magen Mishnah and tries to be Mokun the Rambam, according to the other Rishonim, which I didn't have a chance to look at the Merkavis Mishnah side. But the simple reading of the Rambam seems to be the way the Magen Mishnah presents it. And I think how the Beis Yosef understood as well, and the Beis Yosef doesn't quote the Rambam Lalacha, that Vest Aguf doesn't have independent standing. But either way, whether or not that's found the Rambam, that's not we some lalacha, and so we'll see that a vesta guf can be relevant on its own. So let's just read for a moment, Sif, your test
so
together.
So it's not any more meikel if she has vesakuf and yamim? You're saying I'm not following.
You're asking lahalacha or according to the Rambam?
According to the Rambam.
According to the Rambam, the way the Magen Mishnah understands it, there's no nafkamina lekula or lechumra in as far as the Issa Labaila if she has a vesakuf manifestation. Everything falls back to the Vesta Yamin.
So how does Guf, what's the halacha according to him? How does a Guf, Vestas a Guf?
So to be Oker, this Vest, you need to have, let's say it's a Vesta Chodesh. So you have to pass that day three times without a Riyah. But even if she experienced a, if she experience the vest haguf for the physical manifestations without a re'iyah, even if those physical manifestations continue, the re'iyah would still be, the vest would still be nakar if there's no re'iyah for those 3 months.
But she doesn't need to be parish.
She would have to be parish until it's nakar, but she's parish because of the vest haguf.
She's parish on those days.
Right, but
even if she doesn't have this feeling,
correct. And even if she had the feeling a different day of the month, that wouldn't engender a chiyah prish on a different day either. Take a look at the Magen Mishnah, but that's not, other Rishonim don't understand that way, and that's not what's reflected in Shulchan Aruch. Let's just read a few tests together. Yesh kovas ves aide mikrim sheyaru begufa kigon shemifahekes tahainu kaadam shaposheitz reosa machmas koved. That's Rashi's first shot. Oh, kaadam shaposeach piv machmas koved. That's the second shot on Tosei Rush. Oh, kaadam shemosi kol derech hagaron. That's the shot on the Aruch. The third shot on Tosei Rush. V'chein im misateshes derech mata. That was the Ramban shot. Oh, choshesh es b'fi krisa b'shipoli me'aha, or she has cramping or abdominal pain. Oh, shasu etzire akadachos, or she has feverish chills. Oh, shirasha ve'verak vedenla, she has headaches or limb aches. V'chol echem e'elu im ya'aru l'shlosha pa'amim v'rasa kavala vest. So all these times, with all these manifestations, if she experiences them three times, and in association with the Re'iyah, so that creates a Vest Kavua. We'll see in Sif Kavav that you could create a Vest She'eno Kavua. In a Vest Aguf, you have to be Choshish for even if it's Eno Kavua. But here the Mechaber is talking about the Kavua manifestation, that you're Koveya it in three instances. She'bechol pam she choshesheth me'am asu l'shamish. And that's going to lead to an Isser Tashmish once she's Koveya. Again, even if it's Eno Kavua, we'll see this is relevant. You're talking about a Vest Kavua, that if you have a Vest Kavua as a Vest Aguf, then anytime she experiences that physical manifestation, that physical sensation, she's going to be Asura B'Tashmish at that point, during that Ona. And we'll talk about the extent of the Ona for a Vest Aguf.
How's he quoting all the different opinions as to what Misatashmish means?
So that's what we quoted from the Rush, that they're all Alacha, that there are, even if the Rishonim argue which one is shot in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah is a lav dafka list, and any physical manifestation that's associated with the Re'iyah would have a din of a Vest Aguf. That's what the Shach points out here in the context of Misateshes, that's what the Rush said in the context of Mifahekes, that it's the list is not meant to be an exhaustive list. And as we noted, some of these, there's some mixing and matching in Rishonim, that most of these end up being attached to one of the words in the Gemara or the Mishnah, and there's just some shifting as to which words mean which. Okay. So back to the Mechaber. Umiyu b'fiyuk o itosh shel pam achas ein aves nikba elikisha osakein harbe pa'amim ze'achar zeh. So we'll come back to this in a little while. But he's saying that a single instance of this manifestation, a single yawn, is not going to create a concern. It has to be multiple occasions. Okay. Now, take a look at the Piskei Tshuva, Sifkat on Kaf Gimel. Quotes in Sidrei Tara that there's one item in our Mishnah that the Mechaber left out. Our Mishnah also had Shofas Dam Tame Mitoch Dam Tar, as the Gemara explained, Shofas. Right? The Mishnah, the Gemara explained that another instance of a woman that begins with the flow of Dam Tahor, and that segues into flow of Dam Tame. So why did the Mechaber not quote that? It says the Piskei Tshuva, quoting from the Sidrei Tara, the Sivkat and Kaf Gemo, Hishmitu Aposkim Lefida Inna Kol Dam B'Tamei Mechaskina Le. So nowadays, we don't really have Dam Tahor. Anytime there's Dam, you could have a Mara Tahor. But any flow of dam, we're machron. We don't paskin that something that's dam could be dam tahar. V'ayim etshuvas pnei Yeshua, kasa duadin barasa tchilak ein mugla v'yachas adam tahainu shafas dam tamim v'toch dam tar uledina dvar nechonim. That you could have a kesem that leads to a re'iyah. And that's what we had discussed previously in the context of when to begin your cheshbon of avestos. But the Piskei Tshuva was saying that Lemaisa, the example itself of Dam Tahor leading to Tame, is not Lemaisa nowadays when we don't paskin on Dam that it is Tahor. The Aruch HaShulchan on that point writes the following in Oth Nun Gimel. Gemara chashav nami shofas dam tame mitoch dam tahor achatzlenu lakadam tar achakol ze gam lididan kishe shofas dam mitoch migla shekain darka she mikon shofas mugla achakachdam haya hamugla vesta. You could have a situation where you have a kesem that leads to ria, and that kesem might create a vest aguf. And Rav Moshe raises this, again, we discuss this in the context of what does a kesem do as far as cheshbening vestos in general. And if a woman sees a kesem in advance of her re'iyah, do you start counting, or do you count your yom vest from the day of the kesem or from the day of the re'iyah? So Rav Moshe had written in Chela Gimel Siman Nun Aleph that if a woman sees a kesem and then that leads to a re'iyah, Rav Moshe thinks that the ikar vest is when she has the normal re'iyah. But Rav Moshe says that if she does create a pattern of having samim as a precursor to the re'iyah, and that happens three times, that becomes like a vestaguf, and that's like this instance of shofas that the Mishnah discusses, where you'd have to be choshesh for the day that you see the kesem as a vestaguf. Okay. Now, Tosus writes, and this is what we just saw a formulation of in the Mechaber. Tosus writes on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph on the Mishnah, Dibra Maskil Ma'atashes. V'kulu Hani Vestos Airi Shemifahekes O Ma'atashes Shah Oshtayim Be'ez Sheregila Liros. That when we talk about these instances of Vestos Haguf in the Mishnah, we're talking about where a woman experiences pihuk or itush, however you want to understand those, yawns, burping, passing gas, stretching, whatever the particular manifestations are. So she experiences these for an hour or two in advance of the riyah. So it's not a single yawn, but it's a repeated yawning over the course of an hour or two. But if she just yawns once, she just stretches once, that doesn't create a concern, even on an Edo Kavua level. And the Raya is, midamaflik bein tchilas fast l'sof fast, u'b'chad pik v'chad itur shel shayach tchila v'sof. The Mishnah later, in the follow-up to the line we just read, talks about the tchilas avest and a sofa vest. In the context of a vest aguf, if the vest need only be a single yawn, so there's no tchilas avest and sofa vest to talk about. Tchilas avest, sofa vest, sounds like that there is a continuum, a more significant amount of time, where you can pinpoint the beginning of that and the end of that. So if you're yawning over a period of a few hours, an hour or two, so then you can talk about a tchilas avest or a sofa vest. If you only have one yawn, then there's no tchilas avest or sof avest to speak of. And the Rush in Siman Aleph has a similar formulation that we're not talking about a single instance of a single yawn, but he has a lashon of kama pa'amim zar chosem, that you're yawning a number of times in succession. So if there is a diuk there, it's not, I saw in the Masifta Gemara, they call the Tosiyantu pointing this out. How significant it is, I'm not sure, but it's not the same as Tosis. Tosis has an hour or two. Tosis Rush, the Rush in the Psakim says, Kama Pa'amim Zar Chazab. But either way, it's more than a single instance of a yawn. So that's what we just read in Shulchan Aruch over here. The Mechaber had written, but it's not a single instance. It has to be done harbe pa'amim zacharzat. So what's harbe pa'amim? Again, the Rush had kama pa'amim. This is harbe pa'amim. The Tosas had shashatayim. The Torah Hashlamim here, excuse me, Torah Hashlamim here just quotes Tosfos in Sivkat Lamaches, the Hainu Shah O Shatayim. But Rav Osner in the Shira Shevet Levi says he doesn't mean Dafka Shah O Shatayim when he's quoting Tosos. He's just saying that this is the amount of time in which the Vest HaGuf manifests itself. But it would have to take place, meaning if you're looking at a 1 hour, 2 hour window, he says it's pasha that just yawning three times over 2 hours doesn't constitute a vesaguf. Stretching three times over 2 hours doesn't constitute a vesaguf. It means repeated, what the threshold is, doesn't say anywhere. But repeated instances, repeated manifestations of this vesaguf within that hour or two or more, as opposed to not only a single manifestation wouldn't constitute a vest, but even a few limited manifestations would not constitute a vest either. And that seems to be reflected in the Aruch HaShulchan's presentation here as well. The Aruch HaShulchan in Oz Nun Dalid. He writes as follows. Veda, da kavana b'chol elu lo al pam elcha v'lo shnei pam v'lo shlosha. It's not one, two, or three times. If you yawn three times, that does not a vest haguf make. Delumination v'fehekas om ateshes eza pa'amim b'yom choshen l'zeh. Elokishim v'fehekas harbi pa'amim b'yom zeh. V'ras adam. So it has to be that it happens on multiple, a significant number of occasions on that day, and then is followed by riya. Mufloggim. have a vest, chabachal eis chitari lefai, kol atesh, tachush the vest. So what it means, if you're going to be koveya a vest aguf, it means that on three separate days, there are multiple significant instances of this vest that then lead to a ria. So if you experience these multiple yawnings in succession, which are followed by a ria on three different occasions, that would create a vest aguf that's kavua. It's normal for a person to yawn or a person to release gas on a occasional basis, and that's not in any way an indicator of an impending
I don't know if this is going to be addressed later, but especially in Rav Elazar and Aruch Shulchan, they're saying the significance of having multiple occurrences of the yawn, for example, is because that in and of itself is significant. That's not a normal thing that someone would do, therefore you can connect it to the Ria. It has nothing to do with there being Tchila and the Sof of the Ona. So that's one aspect I don't understand. Second aspect I don't understand is if the concern is having a tchila and sof that you need to mark with whatever the physical symptoms are, why don't we just default to a normal ona, meaning the 12-hour period? If you have one, we'll say, really big yawn that you only have once a month and is very obvious is connected to biologically is connected to the ria. If you have only one of those, then we'll just say, okay, and your ona is that entire daytime period, that entire nighttime period. Okay, why don't we say that?
So I think you asked your first question so well, I don't understand what you didn't understand.
I don't understand.
You formulated, in your first question, you formulated what we said very well. So I wasn't sure what you were unclear on.
So my first question is, coming off of Tosfos in the Rush, it sounds right. Like the reason that we need multiple occurrences mm-hmm. of physical symptom is in order is for the sake of Zman, right? You need to have a beginning point and ending point.
The beginning point and end point is Tosas Raya. Tosas Raya that it can't be for other reasons, but it can be, leaving aside Svaras, it can't be in practice that a single yawn would constitute a vest aguf, because the Mishnah has an expression of tchilas avest and sof avest. And you can't, if you're talking about one yawn, there's no tchila and sof to speak of. That's just a textual raya. But the point in Svara, as the Aruch HaShulchan expands on, is that, as you just said, in order for avest aguf to concern us, it has to be something that's abnormal that would likely be associated with the impending Ria and isn't just a random yawn that anybody will experience when they're tired.
Okay, so that I understand. So I guess just a question, this is really just, I guess, on Tosfos, is I don't really understand his textual Raya in saying we must have at least two different yawns in order so that we can have a Zman. But when we talk about tchilas avest and sof avest, we're talking about the ona, like a normal ona, 12-hour period. So why can't that also be what the Mishnah is referring to here?
So this I think we will talk about as we go on. I don't know if we'll get to it today or next time. That the window, this was your second question, so I guess it all relates. The window of concern for Vesta Guf may be different than standard Vesta. Standard Vestos, we look at the Ona, Vesta Chodesh, Vesta Flaga. So here we're not, we'll have to flesh out the details, but we're not necessarily and probably not looking at the Ona. We're just looking at the window in which the physical manifestation is experienced.
Okay, thank
you. We'll have to flesh that out as we go on.
If Tchilas and Sof HaVest is the range of which she's yawning, shouldn't she need to yawn after she sees also? She needs to be yawning over a range, and in the middle she sees.
Again, if Tchilas HaVest and Sof HaVest is the range of the yawning, then
and she needs to see during that range, right?
Then she would need to see during. Again, that will depend on how like this kind of vest is to other vestas. Maybe a vesta goof is unique in that because it's simply a reflection of something impending. And this will relate to the question as to the gap between the vesta goof and the re'ia that still concerns us about a vesta goof. And maybe this is different than a standard vest. There are different manifestations of how this works. But lahalacha, it still could be, as we'll have to talk about, that no, if you have a vest aguf, that's different than a standard vest, and the re'iyah may follow the end of the manifestation of the physical signs.
What is klil and sof? Why is that relevant? It's like according to Tosos, the Tosos Harash. What does that mean?
So the Mishnah is Haisa Lemud Elias Rob Betchilas Avestos, Kolataras Chasas Abasoch Avestos, Timaeus. So that means that if a woman experiences her Re'iyah at the beginning of the Vestagos, then all the Taras that she comes in contact with during the Chasa Vest is Tame. If it's Besoch Avestos, then kol ataras she'asa b'socha vestas tara. So that would mean, and again, this is kaf gimel, or kaf dalid rather, which I don't think we're going to get to today, sif kaf dalid, but that would mean that you could have if a woman only expects to see dam at the end of this fast, or let's say for argument's sake, we're talking about a 4-hour window in which she yawns and has incessant yawning for 4 hours, and then she always sees dam at the end of that 4 hours, then any taras that she comes into contact with during the 3 hours are presumed to be tar because the association with the ria is only besofa vest. Okay?
Even though she didn't see until after she stopped yawning.
So even if she didn't see until after, then it should be mutter the entire 4 hours?
You're saying it true. Would...
Meaning whatever the point at which she expects to have the Ria is, the Taras that she comes into contact with up to that point are going to be mutter. But that's the difference between, we'll see when we get to Sifka Dalid, the difference between a case where the re'ia precedes the end of the vest and where the re'ia takes place before the end of the vest. So let's hold off on that for now.
And the other thing is, where exactly do you draw the line for how much she needs to yawn?
How much
she needs to yawn across? It's very vague.
That's not clear. I mean, it sounds, you know, as Rav Osner points out in the Shir Shevet Alevi, it doesn't say anywhere in Poskim where you draw the line. It sounds like if it's a abnormal expression, or the instances that take place are beyond what you normally have in any other context. And then maybe that's subjective based on the person. If a person knows what kind of yawning they're used to under normal circumstances, and this is something that's not a tired yawn, but it's associated with an impending re'iyah. So at the point where you could tell that this is different in quality, quantity, volume, whatever, than your standard yawning, then maybe that's where you meet the threshold. But it's not. There's no exact formula that I've seen in Poskim.
Does anyone say it needs to be different in terms of amount or how she yawns?
I think that was the point of the Rosh
Hashanah. She says she needs to yawn a lot.
She has to yawn a lot in a way that's not, meaning, again, the Rosh Hashanah's expression, Well, everyone yawns at some point, but this is a more intense kind of yawning, more frequent, more different.
Does anyone besides Rav Hashemun say that?
I think Rav Osner was explaining that also. I'm sure others did. I haven't.
But no Rishonim explicitly say that.
No, in the Rishonim, no, correct. This is all an explanation in Rishonim. As far as I know, there's nothing more befarish in Rishonim than what we saw in Tosis and the Rush of Shashatayim or the Mechaber's Harbe, or the Rush's Kama Pamazar Chazah. These are all the later far and try to embellish on that a little bit what the point is, but no, I don't think you have a more direct formulation of Rishonim than what we saw. But the Shach, I mean, the Aruch HaShulchan is a little bit, embellishes a little bit more, but basically the Shach really makes a point. You look in the Shach in Sukkot and in Dalid, Elikish Osekein Harbe Pa'amim, Dim Lokein, Ein Aveth Nikba Bekach, Ki Zedar Kol Olam Ein Kanshinoi. If it's going to be less than Harbe Pa'amim, then that's just the normal yawning or normal stretching that a person does. It's not going to be Kaveya a Aveth HaChodesh. Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about what gap is allowed between the manifestations of the Vesta Guf and the Re'iyah in order to give something a status as the Vesta Guf. So the Rashba writes on Daf Yudalim and Aleph in the Taurus Abayas, but it's actually, this din is quoted in Shulchan Aruch in Sifkaf, so let's just read it together in Sifkaf, because you have that in front of you. So the Mechaber writes, again, this is based on the Rashba. Piyaka beis pa'amim birosh chodesh. So let's just call that yawning for argument's sake. The woman yawns twice on Rosh Chodesh, virasa. So in two consecutive Rosh Chodesh, she yawns, and that yawning is followed by Riyah. V'achar kach piyaka shelo b'Rosh Chodesh, v'rasa, and then she yawns on a different day and has Riyah. Hover adar v'she'en Rosh Chodesh gari. So there, the fact that there's a connection, the piyuk leads to Riyah on a different day, indicates that Rosh Chodesh isn't part of the equation. So ein Rosh Chodesh gar mela piyuk. V'chein im v'pam ha'shlish is rasa v'Rosh Chodesh below piyuk. And if the third time she has a re'en Rosh Chodesh and there's no yawning, v'var davar she'en a piyuk gar. So that shows you that it's not the yawning that's garim, ala Rosh Chodesh. So in both of these instances, for the first two months, there's a confluence of the Vest HaGuf and the Yom of the month. The Vesta Chodesh, and the third month is Machria in either direction, that only one of them is really the Gorin. Fine. Aval, this is the case of the Rashba that we're interested in. In Piyuka Beis Pa'amim B'Rosh Chodesh, so let's say 2 months in a row, she yawns on Rosh Chodesh, and that's followed by Riyah on that day. U'Bepam HaShlish is Piyuka B'Kav Tesla Chodesh, V'Lo Rasa. In the third month, she has the yawning on Erev Rosh Chodesh. She doesn't see Dam in Erev Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh rasa below piyuk, and then on Rosh Chodesh she sees dam, but no more yawning because she was yawning the day before. Kavula veth lepiyuk to Rosh Chodesh. So the Rashba psak is, and in this case, you have a veth kavua, a veth taguf, that's murkav with a veth tachodesh, a hybrid of a veth taguf with veth tachodesh, where the kvias requires both elements in order to be manifest. Shepiyuk shall esmal garam l'riya shavrosh chodesh. Because we assume that even though, technically speaking, there was no yawning on Rosh Chodesh, but the yawning was the day before, and that's sufficient to create the association between the pihuk and the day. So that's the psak of the Rashba Torah Sabayis on Yudalit Amud Aleph in our pagination. Shar Gimel Bayisayim. And that's what's quoted here, Lalacha, in Shulchan Aruch. Now, Bayisayim Shar Gimel, sorry. Now, the Ra'am in his Bedek Abayis argues, right? So, according to this Rashba, you see so far that at the very least, you don't have to have the Vesta Guf in the same Ona as the Re'iyah, because here the Re'iyah is on Rosh Chodesh, and the Vesta Guf is the day before. So at least in this case, you could have a Vesta Guf that is manifest at least one Ona prior to the Ona Sariyah. The Ra'ah in the Bedek Abayis argues, and he writes as follows. Eino nochon klau, v'ro aniz divrei chavirenu, she'eina kvitzos domin bedinin lipi hukin. That there's a difference between a vesta kvitzos and a vesta guf. She'a kvitzos goremes levest she'avo. So when it comes to a vesta ones, as we discussed last time, it's a kvitza that causes the onset of the re'iyah. The cave and chicane, after shakvitza shal yom zeh, garb levest shiavalamacha. So when it comes to vesta ones, it's reasonable to associate an ones, the kvitza, on the day before with the re'iyah on the subsequent day. Aval apiyuk eino kein, ala haves garb lepiyuk. But as we explained before, when it comes to vesta guf, it's not the physical manifestation which is causing the re'iyah, it's the re'iyah, the vest, that's causing the physical manifestation. The eshel vest ligrom bia sapiyuk yomecha korim kein. If that's the case, that if it's the onset of the re'iyah that's causing the simin haguf, the vest haguf, then that can't work backwards. You can't have a re'iyah today that's causing a vest haguf yesterday. So says the Ra'ah in the Bedek Abayis. So the Ra'ah can't conceive of a Vesta Guf that would precede the Yom HaRi'iyah. Then the Rashba counters back in the Mishmeres Abayis. It's in the bottom of the left column if you have it in front of you. Yidalei Amud Aleph in the pagination of the Torah Abayis. La'olam devar vavuchen adarabu lule sha'amrua begemara laha bevesa kvitza hayalana lomar de kevin shakvitza garamis leves kosheba goreim hayalal leves lavo because shaloba imo yeshkan muchiach shena kvitza garamis ela yomu goreim afil hachi amr shakvitza garamis afapisha kama veloba vestimo. When it comes to Vesta Kvitzos, a Vesta Ones, there you would have expected that it has to be in the same Ona. Otherwise, how can you approve the association? He says, when it comes to a Vesta Guf, it's the accumulation of Dam in the Rechem that's about to come out that causes the physical signs. Yesh lomar kein, shaves niskanes berechem, v'cheilosav kodemes, dayinu apihukin komaslo. So what really happens, it's true that the ves haguf is not what's causing the re'iyah, but the relation is still a little more complex than that, because what happens is the rechem fills up, or let's say the endometrial lining begins to shed, and that's going to cause the re'iyah. But there's a certain amount of time between the beginning of the shedding of the endometrial lining and when the dam actually goes into the prosdar and comes out of the body. So once it starts to shed, that's what causes the vesta guf. And the vesta guf is a simen, an indicator that the re'iyah is going to be forthcoming. But it's not that the Re'iyah causes the Vesel Guf. And the Rosh says, if the Re'iyah causes the Vesel Guf, how could it be that that is on an earlier day? But it's the beginning of the buildup of Dam that causes the Vesel Guf. And that Vesel Guf is a precursor to the Re'iyah, which is going to happen a certain amount of time after the beginning of that buildup. So that's how the Rosh formulates it. To explain that there's no contradiction. The fact that a Vesel Guf is not the cause of the Re'iyah doesn't in any way mean that it can't precede the Re'iyah at least by a day. So that's the Rashba's tzak here, and that's what's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that at least we know from this instance in the Rashba that you could have a Vesel Guf that precedes the Re'iyah by a day. What about more than a day? So Rabbi Morgenstern on page 82, footnote 37, points out that there's no explicit source in Rishonim that you could have a gap of more than a day. But he does point out the following that may be a source or a model, and that's a comment of the Agos Maimonios, Yisui Bia Perek Dalid O Slamid. Yisui Bia Perek Dalid O Slamid. You'll recall we discussed previously the Maaseh of Rabbi Yochanan and the woman who was Regila Liros Belel Tfilasa. So the Gos Maimonides writes, Miu Mechash Chayshinan Chada Zimna Acharyasa. So let's say a woman sees Dam. The case in the Gemara there, Rabbi Yochanan Paskindan, was a woman came back from the mikvah and would see Dam Leil Tefillah. What about a case where a woman sees Dam two nights after Leil Tefillah, meaning not Leil Tefillah, but the following night? Achar kach tifrosh mi baila Leil Sheni Shel Tefillasa. So in that case, that creates a Vesh Eina Kavua for Leil Sheni Litfilasa. So maybe that's some kind of model that you could have a Vesh that's created that's more than a day removed from the manifestation. As if you assume that it's somehow the Leil Tefillah that is Goreim, or that has the association with the Re'iyah, and it's a day removed, and you still have to be Choshesh, then maybe that's some kind of model. But the Chavos Das points out in Simen Kuf Pei Zayin Be'urim Sifkatan Tesvav, Kuf Pei Zayin Be'urim Sifkatan Tesvav, that even though Gos Maimonides is only talking about a case where there was no Tashmish on Leil Tefillah, And then the first time she had Tashmish is the second night. In the context of whether that's Roma Achmas Tashmish or it could be told in something else, that's what the Gos Maimonides says. You could treat that as a Ves Shein and Kavua, that there's an association with the Leil Tefillah. But maybe that's not a model for anything broader. And that's what the Aruch HaShulchan writes here in Sifkata Nun Beis. Pashahu, the Dafka Bikvitza shall etmol tolin, the lo bahayom shekodim lo. So when it comes to Vesta Kvitzos, you could only be told a day before. The Koshekain Mikodim Zaharbe. And then he says, in our context, so the Aruch HaShulchan also says there's no evidence for allowing a gap of more than one day between a Ves HaGuf and the Re'iyah. Now Rabbi Morgenstern does point out that the Tshuva of Moshe we discussed earlier in the case of the woman who asks Samim a few days even before her Re'iyah. So there, to the extent that Moshe treats that as a Vesta Guf, They were talking about a vesta guf where the manifestation is more than a day, is more than a day before. Rav Osner in the Shiur Shevet Levi says that if the indicators, the siman and the vesta guf, precede the re'iyah by a few days, then you don't have to be choshesh the first time that the first day. Meaning if a woman will always experience cramping for 4 days before her re'iyah, and we assume that the cramping would have the status of a vesta guf, but we don't treat the first of those 4 days as the vesta guf. But he does say a woman would need to know what the range is between the onset of cramping and her re'iyah. So if a woman will always see dam between 2 and 4 days after the beginning of cramping, so then at the earliest point where historically she may see dam after the onset of cramping, she should treat that as a vesta guf. So if a woman will always see dam between day 2 and day 4, so day 1 she doesn't have to worry, but come day 2 she would have to treat that as a vesta guf. Rav Azar does think that even once you do have the onset of this kind of cramping, if it's associated with the re'iyah, then even if it's not technically a vesta guf yet, but it's prudent to do a bedika kodem tashmish if you're going to have tashmish during that window. Rabbi Morgenstern quotes from Rav Yashiv that Rav Yashiv felt me'ikar adin that you shouldn't need to be choshesh for a vesta guf for more than 1 day prior to the re'iyah. He says, Chacham Eina Barosho, that if a woman knows that this kind of, even if it's 2 days, or she starts having these sensations 2 days before a re'iyah, once she has a sensation again, it's probably a good idea to be parish, because you can't have full confidence in the predicted range. Okay, I think we'll stop here for today. And next time we'll talk about bedikos for a vest shena kavua for vesta guf, and the difference between a regular vesta guf and a vesta guf morkav, and the difference between a re'iyah tocha vest and the achara vest, and then vest ayidei achila. So I'll bli neder put up more marmer combos after we get off now. Okay, so I'm assuming that we'll have another 4 shiurim at least, meaning the next 2 weeks. Everyone's still on board?
Sounds good.
Good to me.
Okay, so it looks like we'll